Welcome to the first official Redeeming Features podcast by the Roofers Project. And this podcast, we decided to watch Blues Brothers 2000 to let you know if it's redeemable. Let's roll the theme!
Good to be bad, so bad it's good. What's this movie? Do you think we should? It's got bad dialogue, dodgy creatures, but we want to know what the redeeming features.
Hello everyone out there in podcast land, and welcome to the first official Roofers Project Redeeming Features cast. That's a bit of a mouthful. My name's Trevor Holland, and I am joined by my good friend,
Christian Fletcher. Great to be back, Trevor. Thanks so much. And may I mention that I particularly like the Redeeming Features intro music. I'm sure everyone cottoned onto that one, and it seems like a very familiar voice in there. I can't quite put my finger on it, but anyway.
I don't know if I should comment. I'll probably wait to see how the reaction to the new theme goes before I admit to being the one writing and singing the vocals. Oh, damn.
Oh, well, you covered it well, Trevor.
Anyway, so, yeah, here we are. Very exciting. I think this has been coming for a while. The Redeeming Features really has been in the process of gradually taking over from the main podcast, to the extent that we did a couple of podcasts which were essentially were their own Redeeming Features podcast. So, yeah, let's make it official. Here we are. Okay, Christian, so I've done plenty of talking so far, so I think I'll hand it to you. How about you let everyone know what we are talking about in this podcast?
Okay, well, I'll give us a bit of context. I actually think this is probably the best movie for us to have chosen, Trevor, you know, with a mutual interest in the original film. We're actually going back to 1998 with the sequel to the 1980 film Blues Brothers. The film was Blues Brothers 2000. Now, I'd always assumed this came out in 2000, but no, this is one of the many, I'm sure, problems that lie within the film, but it was actually indeed released in 1998. So, being the fact that we've done, Trevor and I are quite prolific, I suppose, in our interactive movie participation, and I know that we do perform the Blues Brothers, so there is quite a connection with that, with the original film, with both of us. So, I thought it was probably a really good time for us to visit this film for me the first time. What about yourself, Trevor?
Yeah, I have never been brave enough to see this. I'm such a big fan of the Blues Brothers. It is well up there as one of my favourite movies of all time. So that alone made me quite cautious about approaching Blues Brothers 2000. But I had to see it sometime, and why not do it for this podcast?
Perfect reason. And hey, I think you probably speak for a lot of other people, Trevor, who would have been quite dubious about, I suppose, tackling the film when it first came out, because they have such fond memories of the original. And hey, the fact that the original has played so much more today than the 1998 film could possibly be a statement on its quality or how it was received or what people actually think. So, but we will get to that, I'm sure. So, Blues Brothers 2000 from 1998.
Yep, absolutely. So I think we'll start with some facts. I'm kind of tentatively calling this section Turkey Trivia. I hope to come up with a better name at some point. But essentially what that means is we're going to talk turkey, talk about the figures, and then a little bit of trivia about the movie before we move on to discussing this turkey in full. Ooh, spoiler. Speaking of spoilers as well, must warn you, there is no way we can do a Redeeming Features without doing spoilers for the movie. So if you do not want 1998's Blues Brothers 2000, that's confusing, spoiled, then you better stop listening to this podcast right now, go watch it, then come back. Okay, that's a deal.
Admittedly, Trevor, we don't go too far out with the spoiler type thing, but it is always good having a spoiler alert at the start, so it gives us a bit more freedom in being able to, I suppose, criticise slash analyse the film. So
absolutely. Okay, well, let's move on. I'll talk a bit of Turkey about this.
Turkey.
It's rated 4.8 on IMDb, which was my first surprise. Seriously, the reputation of this movie and what I've heard of it, actually, I found that as a bit of a surprise. It was a budget of about $28 million for this, and it's basically grossed about $26 million, so close to breaking even. So, again, I found that a bit of a surprise.
But that said, with the profits of the original film, I'm sure that, you know, that couple of million wouldn't have made too much difference. But yeah, are you surprised in the fact, Trevor, that the fact of the reputation of the first film, that it would have sold, like more people would have wanted to go and see the sequel? Is that what you're thinking?
Maybe it might have been an initial push, but I think once word of mouth got around and that reputation started building, it would have been a pretty quick drop-off.
Well, I even remember going to see when Grease came back to the cinemas in 1998, which was for its 20th anniversary. So that was great being able to see, especially in a packed cinema. And I remember specifically Blues Brothers 2000 being a trailer at one of these screenings. So they were definitely trying to, I suppose, get into that, I suppose, that musical sort of market. And as we will speak about, the film very much follows this path. But it would have definitely been something that would have... It even felt like this in the ad. It was almost pushed as the summer blockbuster, as, you know, this is a movie you have to see. So I remember the trailer being quite exciting. So put us in context a little bit there.
Absolutely. Now, the other part of the Turkey trivia, of course, is the trivia. And I had a bit of a dig. And first up, I found quite interesting, was that John Belushi, who unfortunately had passed away before the making of this movie, his younger brother, James Belushi, was signed up to be part of the cast as well, but had some scheduling conflicts, so I don't know if James Belushi considers that a good thing or a bad thing.
I had read that too, Trevor, but I was also imagining him with the, you know, with the shades and the suit on, and I think it would have been, you know, so similar to his brother, but at the same time too, I think it would have been quite a bit too eerie, I think. So I think it was probably wise them going with someone like John Goodman, who had a very similar look to, say, Dan Aykroyd. So, yeah, I actually think James Belushi did a wise thing by not being in it.
Rightio. The other thing, which does tie into the Talking Turkey bit, is that Dan Aykroyd and John Goodman actually worked without pay to try to help keep the budget down of the movie.
Oh my gosh! Well, considering it was $26, $28, I think it was $28 million,
yeah.
Dollars, and I wouldn't be surprised, Trevor, if $22 million of that is the car pile-ups. Mm-hmm. We will also get to that, but yeah, isn't that interesting? But that shows to me a real labor of love that Dan Aykroyd was so determined for the Blues Brothers to hit the big screen again. Mm-hmm. Maybe he was at a slump with his career at the time, or I don't know. I just feel that the choice of him wanting to do this film was quite odd, considering his connection with John Belushi. You know what I mean? It seems like something, you know, you either do it with him or we don't do it at all. So I felt it kind of had this, and I noticed this throughout the whole movie, it kind of had this almost awkward sadness about it. You know, I've noticed it more at the start when Dan Aykroyd's more on his own, you know, doing his own thing. But yeah, it's really quite interesting looking at it that way.
Absolutely. And I do know that John Goodman spent quite some time trying to build his chops as a musical performer in movies. I do remember around the time he was appearing in things like King Ralph, and I think there was a few others where he got to do a musical number.
That's right, and I think it was, you know, because we'd all seen, you know, we'd all sort of remember seeing him on Roseanne for so many years, and I think he was always trying to break out of that by doing all these different, you know, unusual different roles. I actually, even though he ended up doing a great job, I wouldn't have thought to have chosen him for the film, but yeah, as I said, he ended up doing the role well. And I think the fact that Dan Aykroyd had kind of bulked up a bit, but yeah, I don't know, it looked a bit different. It sort of, yeah, definitely fit the John Goodman build a bit more too. So they were very similar. So it was like taking the Blues Brothers to a whole new level, or a whole, you know, it was almost like the Blues Brothers in an alternate reality or something like that from the one that we're familiar with.
Fair enough. Well, before we get too much into the movie itself, because we're trying to keep this under control, we obviously we can just talk and talk and talk and talk and talk movies, so we've got to try to keep this under control. So before we get into our thoughts on the movie and a bit of a discussion about, you know, what we thought while watching it, we'll start off, I suppose, at the lower end of the scale. Amazon is a great site for reviews, and so what I've done is I've had a look through, and I've had a look through some of the less positive reviews, and I've got one here. The title of the review is, "As a Blues Brothers fan, I'm peeved," with about a half dozen exclamation marks. "This movie stinks. After waiting a good portion of my life to see the long-awaited sequel, my heart sank to my feet at the cheesy plot, stupid jokes, and the fact that as an Illinoisian, you could easily tell they were not in Chicago. I took the video out and threw it against the wall shortly after seeing the ridiculous Bluesmobile-turned-submarine scene. John Belushi, John Candy, and Cab Calloway deserved much better. Some say the music was great. As a musician, the music in this movie doesn't compare to the quality blues of the first movie. Way overproduced. Then, all in caps, do not buy this bad, useless excuse for a film. 1 star.
Whoa, it was interesting. But then I do support some of his claims in that review. But gosh, that was quite a scathing one. But he sounds like a very, very diehard Blues Brothers fan. Someone who was quite jilted by having seen the new movie. So yeah, that wasn't a very good review at all. But at the same time, too, hit on some interesting points that are quite true.
Yeah, but there is definitely some truth behind that review. It's probably a bit harsh, I will admit now, but certainly there are, shall we say, a few issues with this movie?
Oh, definitely, and I think, with the risk of butting in, Trevor, I think my biggest thing, and I noticed it the entire way through and in hindsight, is that they did whatever they could to try and copy the original as much as possible. But in the fact of doing a sequel or a remake or something like that, we always criticise people for sort of, I don't know, changing things too much. So maybe what they've inadvertently done is pretty much created the perfect sequel indirectly. Not perfect in terms of a great entertainment, but in terms of they've thought, well, let's take every single thing from that original movie, you know, almost going down to the 1 second cameos, and let's replicate it in 1998. But, you know, replicate it exactly, but in terms of, you know, like, take those same scenes and use a different song in that circumstance and almost follow the same plot structure. And that, to me, Trevor, is what sort of just stood out to me the entire time with this.
Mm.
And I don't know, for risk, I shouldn't compare it to the original film, I know, but it's very hard not to. And, yeah, I think it's quite important for criticism of this or for analysis of this to compare it, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's there as a direct sequel, so comparisons are unavoidable, and which also does make it quite a bit, problematic, I guess, if you're a big fan of the first movie.
Mm-hmm.
And plus, right from the outset, in the opening credits, there is actually quite a big card, which says that it is dedicated to John Belushi, John Candy, and Cab Calloway, which means that that puts a very big expectation on this movie right up top.
Yeah, and it's almost like, who have you got to not replace them, but who what other big names do you have in this film? You know, almost, you know, in comparison or something like that. But yeah, it was almost. I think going back to the review that guy said, yeah, I probably think that they might not have liked their in memory of at the start of this movie. So.
Yeah, I don't know. I think they probably would have appreciated it, but
yeah. But at the same time, too, like for myself, not remembering who was in this film, you did kind of have that kind of sad, oh, that's right. You know, Cab Calloway wasn't alive when they made this, so you know, it's interesting to it was quite sad. But and I think the first sort of 10 or 15 minutes of the film had this sort of sadness about it. There was a lot of scenes with you know, Dan Aykroyd, you know, getting out of prison and then he's finding out that his brother's died and all this sort of stuff. Seems very similar to the opening film when he comes out of the prison gates. But it almost had, when you're seeing him standing there waiting for a lift and he's just there all on his own, it had this real, kind of sadness about it. And I've even got written here in my notes, I even questioned to myself, should they really be doing this? Should they really have done this film? It kind of left me with that sort of question, you know. It almost felt like, you know, without John Belushi, why did they do this? But I'm sure that, you know, they wanted to continue the Blues Brothers story. But, yeah, that sadness did sort of, you know, linger until he teamed up with the other people.
Very much. I mean, yeah, I've got noted here that it was just downright depressing. I mean, having him standing out front of the prison, so he comes out, he's there. He comes out in daytime, then it's nighttime, then it's the next day, and he's still standing there. And they cut back to inside where one of the first cameos, Frank Oz,
He's back again.
Yeah, he's not signing him out this time. He's the warden. He's got a promotion. And he just goes, is that Elwood Blues? And turns to the prison guard. Has anyone told him about Jake? I thought you told him. And then he goes outside and puts his hand on Elwood's shoulder, and Elwood just looks down. I mean, frankly, that alone was worth a heartbreak. Was a heartbreak. Then they cut to the hospital. Sister Mary's back, but she's Mother Mary now.
Yeah,
and he
back the respect too, which is really cool.
Yep, and he's asking about Curtis, and it's like, oh, I'm terribly sorry, Elwood. Curtis has moved on, and then when he goes to the police station, my first thought as soon as he's outside the police station is, oh God, are they going to do something about John Candy as well? Because if they do, I'm probably going to cry. And I was watching this movie on my tablet on public transport. So I was really, really scared that they were then going to move on and do a reference to John Candy, which they didn't do, which I'm glad about on one side, but then on the other side, it's like, hey, why did John Candy miss out, you know?
I know. What about like a reference to Orange Whips or something too would have been awesome. But
that's true.
But at the same time, like, even though it kind of felt like they sort of did it and sort of got it over and done with, but at least they were clever with it. They didn't linger on it too long. It wasn't this whole, obviously it was, you know, a big deal that Jake wasn't there, but they didn't sort of linger on it. They didn't sort of let it hamper down too much of the continuing story or the adventure. So I think they were clever in that respect. But yeah, it was almost very, very preschool writing with the whole, yeah, just pretty much having them arrive. And as you said, pretty much just revealing straight away that they'd passed away. Okay, move on. Let's start this movie.
Yeah. And I think the movie really got started with that Mother Mary scene. And I can't believe I've forgotten the name of the actress.
Kathleen Freeman, that's it.
That's the one, yeah. So same actress, and same gag of every time the Dan Aykroyd makes any sort of lewd comment, he gets whipped, not with a ruler this time, but with some extendable metal.
Oh, that's right. I think we're thinking it's ruler back, but yeah, it's kind of like a car aerial or something.
Yeah, but plot-wise, pretty much it's all set up by her speech. I mean, she is just like exposition nun at the start of this movie. Just goes into so much detail, set up, they insert a child into the plot, and really, from that point on, they say, hey, you're going to get teamed up with this kid and look after him, but after that, it kind of just... the plot kind of goes out the window pretty quickly, I think, after that.
It kind of becomes like what I said earlier, just becomes like one set piece after another trying to replicate the original film, you know, but they have to go and visit all these people, you know. Of course, they've got to go and see James Brown, they've got to go and see Aretha Franklin, and they've got to get the band back together, and yeah, it just felt, but at least, as I said, you know, they were clever in the fact that they obviously found a formula that worked in the original and thought, why change it? So, and you know, when you've got John Landis back as the director again too, even the feel of the movie was so much the same. But funny how that review mentioned that it wasn't actually filmed in Chicago. I didn't even notice, but that's just me not knowing much about the sites, I suppose. But yeah, definitely Landis managed to capture that feel of the 1980 film again. But one thing I even noticed, Dan Aykroyd did actually a pretty good job of going back into Elwood again, but I think he's very much typecast on his persona anyway. But I did note that was, you know, it was very good. It was very much like we were just back in 1980 again, obviously looking a little bit different.
More haggard, perhaps, a bit more world-weary.
Yeah, him and John Goodman look very similar. Yeah. Say that.
Indeed. And I mean, I suppose if we're going to bring that, when you look at the performances of the main cast, so you do have Dan Aykroyd and John Goodman, you know, they actually do the roles quite well. You can't take that away from them. And even the kid, Buster, played by a young J. Evan Bonafont. I don't think we've ever heard of him ever since.
Yeah, I think I looked it up and he was, in a couple of kid direct-to-DVD movies in the early 2000s, and that was the last we heard of him.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, he starts off kind of, you know, just being this bit of luggage, and it was almost like they say, okay, well, we'll put a kid into the plot to make it more interesting and perhaps make it more kid-friendly. They then end up at a strip bar, which then gets rid of any of the kid-friendly. But even though, like, he started off as quite a bit of luggage, he ended up, particularly noticed, like, when he got involved in the musical numbers, that kid could damn well dance.
Oh, I know. And I was even watching when, you know, them, not just the kid, but the whole, as a group, the choreography was really spot on. Like, you can tell they would have rehearsed quite a lot to get the, you know, everything quite synchronized. But yeah, the kid does a bloody great job, especially in those scenes at the end with the concert.
Yeah. It's
where he sort of comes into shine, you know, so much. So, but yeah, you mentioned the strip club. I've even got here strip club as concert scene ? But it's not just a matter of okay, they've the strippers have you come out on their poles at first, do whatever, and then Dan Aykroyd does a bit of a performance on the stage there. But the fact too that the strippers then get involved in the routine and are gyrating up and down the poles as they're singing the backing vocal for I can't even remember what the song was. It was just one of those real question mark moments that you went, is this supposed to be Bob's Country Bunker or something?
There was like three musical numbers in the strip club alone.
I know, and it made me think, because I had read a lot about, you know, them talking about doing more concert scenes in this film, and I was watching this thinking, is this the scenes they were talking about? Not something to write home about. But yeah, quite bizarre. But I mentioned Bob's Country Bunker. It's good to see Bob is back with Bob's Country Kitchen, which is it's quite funny because he sees the Blues Brothers and they end up sort of escaping and but then he kind of then realizes, hey, you guys look familiar. Surely after all the heartache, hey, didn't they end up with a whole like camper van in the lake or something like that? After all the stuff that happened in the first film, surely he would remember people in black suit shades and those hats. I don't know. I just thought it was strange that he didn't make the connection straight away. But that was even a bizarre scene when you've got Dan Aykroyd coming out with his head covered completely in shaving cream to hide his identity.
With the sunglasses and the hat on the outside.
Because we cannot tell who that is now, and that was just an odd scene. But yeah, they definitely tried to have as many kind of these sort of concert scenes, or like they would have realised how good they were in the original film. You know, that last scene when, you know, it was Sweet Home Chicago and everything like that. It's like they've gone, let's do these as many as we can now. There's so many different sort of set pieces with these sort of concerts, you know. But, you know, there's quite some bizarre ones. What about the, I think it was when they were at the country fair or the county fair and the Ghost Riders, and the car pretty much comes to life and comes to save them.
Mm-hmm. He does pull out a little remote control for that.
That's right, sorry, it doesn't have a mind of its own.
I wasn't so concerned about that bit, but the spectral Ghost Riders in the sky bringing a storm while they're performing, I mean, and this was even before it went completely fantastical, which I'm sure we shall touch on at some point.
Yeah, I think I know which part you mean. But yeah, they kept wanting to try and bring in this, you know, listeners, think of the 1980 film when, you know, he sees the light and it seems like they're trying to bring in this kind of otherworldly special effects. They tried to use that quite a lot in this film, and this was probably the first time you really kind of see it, isn't it? And it was quite bizarre.
And, I mean, I'm probably touching this now, because, I mean, you haven't mentioned, like, like we've talked about the plot and how it goes through. I think as a plot device, I mean, going out there, saying there was permission from God to save the orphanage where they grew up, where their surrogate mother and father live, and they want to help them. And then, you know, you have that, I've seen the light, and then later on, when they're having these car chase scenes and the Bluesmobile is essentially managing these miraculous stunts. You know, that kind of ties in. It has that intention that they may well be on a mission from God and it's getting like a little bit of help. To this movie, they're on a road trip to get to a battle of the bands, which I think as a driving plot device, is more just an excuse to get from one musical number to another. So, and then they ante up with the fantastical elements on top of that. And, yeah, I mean, it got to a point where I actually was starting to enjoy this quite a bit. And then it went pretty much crazy-ass bonkers. And
so I know what you mean, Trevor. It's actually one of those films where, you know, I've attempted to try and watch it in the past, but it's actually one of those films where even kind of sort of about 45 minutes to an hour into the film, I was almost sort of questioning, oh gosh, there's still another hour to go. I found that it, you know, whilst the original film, as we know, can be so long, you know, in a good way, like it's a long film, it made you realise how much the momentum of the original was so spot on. Like, it really knew how to have a musical number. Okay, a bit of action now. Okay, a bit of comedy, a bit slower. Whereas this just was like, bam, bam, bam. And then I felt that it kind of, you know, by the second half, it was running out of steam, even though, you know, there was still, you know, a lot of musical numbers. And a lot more than the original. It just felt like it just couldn't keep my interest enough, even though I did have to see it till the very end. But, and that was one thing, you know, with the musical numbers, we noticed that, you know, as we know, Trevor, doing the interactive screenings, there's not that many songs in Blues Brothers, but when they really are amazing. This one, they've just put one wherever they bloody can. And yeah, as many as they can tie, you know, I think of the scene where the secretarial pool and they time it in, they man a sex line number or something like that, and they tie it in with, I can't think of the name of the song, but they tie it in with the song that has pretty much a phone number as the title, you know, and it just felt like, just think everything they've taken from Think, from the original film, they've taken all of the stuff that worked in that scene and tried to fill that with every other sort of musical number. So essentially making it more a musical than the original film, but it almost makes you wish, I don't know, they'd put some of the concepts in the original film and stayed full well away from making this film.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much. I mean, that's what it is. I mean, the vast majority of the plot, which I will certainly do air quotes around, is basically setups for the next musical number. And while some of them, you know, do work okay and do make a bit of a sense, some of them are just so laboured and just, you know, forced in there that it's just so noticeable. You're kind of just going, really?
As much as I adore Aretha Franklin, and, you know, I love Think, and I, you know, I do enjoy, respect is one of the highlights, I suppose, if you could say, of this film. But I even felt, even that felt a bit sort of tired, almost like she didn't even seem to want to be there.
Yeah, and she turns up with the backup dancers in tow.
And I was even trying, I was looking at them really closely and trying to work out, ooh, I wonder if they're the three backup dancers from the Soul Food Cafe. But I'm like, oh, I don't think they were that clever. But you never know, that they're pretty good with getting their cameos. But you know, as you're saying, the word labored comes up. And, yeah, you kind of got when she was, you know, talking to her husband. He wants to go, you know, go away with the band. Ooh, this is all sounding very familiar. And then she said something about, oh, give me a bit of respect. Or maybe he says it and you go, oh, gee, I wonder where this is going next.
And then, oh, the big twist. Oh, shall I give away the big twist at the end?
Oh, yeah, go and do it.
Instead of him storming out, he stands there, head down, looking sad after being sung respect at. He just goes, oh, go on. You won't be happy unless you do. Keep him out of trouble this time, Elwood.
She's probably thinking, I don't want any dialogue. You just got me for the song, didn't you? I don't have to do any other plot. But yeah, I thought that was really strange how she just let him go. But yeah, it just was like, let's replicate that Soul Food Cafe scene as much as we can. But instead, we'll have it in a car yard instead, or a car shop.
Yeah, they've gone from running a Soul Food Cafe to running a Mercedes dealership.
And she's just out spending all the money. But but yeah, there's just so many cameos, and the good thing, you've even got like Paul Schaefer, who did all the music and who we know from The Late Show, and he actually makes a cameo in possibly the most cringeworthiest, to me, scene of the entire film. And I say cringeworthy with a capital C here. Now, this is the I suppose the audition for Battle of the Bands. And Paul Schaefer is there with, I don't have the actor's name, and Queen, he plays Queen Musette or something like that. And literally, I literally had to Wikipedia the plot because I had no idea what had just bloody happened. We mentioned earlier the special effects and different things like that. Let's just say essentially they're, This is how I'm interpreting it. She would prefer, she wants them to perform a Caribbean song or something a bit more of a reggae flavour, and the band says, no, we play blues. So she pretty much brings out her special effects and possesses them, and they perform the number that she wants them to. That's how I've interpreted that.
Yeah, they turn into green zombie singers.
For a minute there,
including the kid.
For a minute there, I'm thinking, does Dan Aykroyd realise this is not Ghostbusters 3? Oh, but yeah, it was so bizarre, almost so out of place too. Because whilst the song wasn't that, bad musically, it really did scream as not fitting with the rest of the soundtrack or rest of the movie, and it was just almost like, why did they put this in here? And the actress herself, I can't remember her name, wasn't necessarily a big famous singer at the time or anything in particular, so the fact that they created this whole set piece around this quite awkward, cringeworthy scene was quite bad.
Yeah, and again, that comes back to the fantastical stuff, so okay, look, we're jumping around, don't care. So
this movie jumps around.
this does, because from one thing to another, with a little care about keeping things consistent or even sensible in between. So, like I said, there were some fantastical elements leading up. Then they have a whole tent revival scene where James Brown comes back out. And instead of one of the Blues Brothers seeing the light, is one of the main police officer chasing them because, of course, they've annoyed the police. Dan Aykroyd stole money from him. He is Curtis Cab Calloway's illegitimate son named Cab, which I thought was a nice little tribute.
Yeah.
So him seeing the light involves him being lifted up by sparkles through the roof into the air and being transformed into a Blues Brother in a flash of light.
Oh, God. Oh, see, at least when it sort of happened in the original movie, it wasn't necessarily this otherworldly thing. It was more just a matter of this realization, and they did it quite cleverly. This was just the fact that he even had to, literally come out of the building, reach the clouds, change his outfit, and then come back down again. It was so out there.
Yeah, and then after that, we went down to New Orleans for the Battle of the Bands, Zombies and Voodoo.
And it just keeps continuing, and then eventually, and I have read this in another review, eventually it becomes a film that doesn't really sort of have a proper ending, too. It just sort of just, all of these set pieces, then it just like, okay, let's go, and they drive from the sunset. So it's, it is quite an interesting concept for a film, and as you said, fantastical, and there's so many of those elements that they try to bring into it, and it's not something that I think... There was an innocence about the original without having something like this. You didn't need to bring this into something like the Blues Brothers. So I find that quite strange and why they felt they needed to do that.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think as you mentioned before, they just tried to do things bigger, which does not necessarily mean better. I mean, instead of Nazis, you've got Russian gangsters and white power extremists, redneck extremists, who get involved. There are car chase scenes, and about halfway through, there is this massive, massive pile up of cars just keeps going and going and going. It's pure gratuitousness.
Apparently, that particular car pileup is actually in the Guinness Book of Records for being, I assume, the biggest car pileup in a film. Only second to that is the first film. So,
fair enough.
But that said, rather than having a whole heap, I know you mentioned, a lot of car chases in the pileup, but I felt that there wasn't as many car chases as the original, but it just felt like the big pileup sort of happened, and that was supposed to be the big main sort of car scene, and you kind of felt, as you said, just look at that destruction on screen, and fair enough, it's got the joke attached to it that they're all running into each other, but after a while you do start to question yourself, God, how stupid could people possibly bloody be?
Yeah, it just keeps on going, just
exactly. Surely someone's seen the big car pileup ahead and possibly put the brake on by now.
I know, it's only until the sidekick cop stops.
Yeah, it's like, oh my, But yeah, so that definitely this that definitely a lot of destruction in there. But like you were saying, they've definitely gone to try and go for bigger. They've gone, how can we make this movie as you know, the best thing possible? Let's just do bigger versions of everything we've done before. And as we know, in the first film, the car scenes you know, take up, you know, the last half an hour of the film and are scattered throughout. So they've just gone, okay, what can we do to better that? How do we better our Guinness World Record? We do more cars.
We'll just condense it all into this one bit in the middle and then finish the movie with the final car chase still going.
Yeah, exactly. And then don't write much of a script. Just fill it out with lots of musical numbers. And gosh, I hope Aretha Franklin and James Brown are free. But yeah, yeah, definitely. I think we've just summed up the movie in a nutshell there. So
pretty much. But make sure James Brown's there. Make sure Aretha Franklin's there, and make sure pretty much every other musical artist we can get our hands on appears, even for just a second. There are so many cameos in this damn movie.
Oh my god! And like, you know, yeah, how many people from the how many people are loosely linked to rhythm and blues that we could possibly get in this film too?
Pretty
and
much.
Yeah, and it literally is a like you said, like, you know, it pretty much seems like every frame there's a, you know, a new person to try and spot, you know, and especially a lot of fun too is trying to spot the cameos from the people from the original movie. And it wasn't just a matter of them getting all the sort of major players; they got a lot of people that were, you know, like Bob from the Country Bunker, you know, like a lot of characters that were only seen in it for a small time. So.
The agent was back, Maurice Lyne.
I can't even think of them all, but I don't have a list in front of me. But yeah, there were quite a lot. You know, it was a bit sad. I may be wrong, but it was a bit sad that Carrie Fisher was nowhere to be seen. But I suppose she had no reason to be there with Jake out of the scene. So, but I may be wrong. She may have popped up somewhere.
But they could have Twiggy come back for her revenge for being stood up.
Yeah, no, it was a bit sad. But so I definitely think that, you know, I don't want to spoil too much to talking, but that's definitely going to be something about my, whether the film's redeemable or not is a lot to do with what we were just speaking about with the cast, I believe. So, but I don't know if you have any more to add, Trevor?
Well, probably just final of the cameos. I mean, they get to this final battle of the bands, and the band they're up against is essentially just this massive group, this massive super group. Which is led by B.B. King, so you can just imagine. I think I've got Eric Clapton's in there. just so many familiar faces and not so familiar faces are in this one band that they go up against. It's just like, and like, they just cut from person to person, just doing one line each of the song before coming back to B.B. King. You're going, wow.
No, it's definitely, and it's like, you know, we say jokingly, oh god, they've got every man and his dog in there, but it's just brilliant that they are able to capture these things on film, and especially looking how good some of the artists look too. I'm sure a lot of them have had a lot of work done, but were looking quite good for the time as well, and hey, their careers would have just been, you know, this would have been another sort of resurgence for them, like the original film would have been as well, so. But the battle of the band scene doesn't quite live up to kind of the sort of the hype or the sort of driving the plot like the concert scenes in the original film. But you know, it's yeah, as you said earlier, battle of the bands was possibly not the best plot device to have used, not the most driving. But hey, I suppose it's all about the music at the end of the day.
Pretty much. So aside from just my curiosity whether or not that final James Brown number was a deleted scene they decided to insert at the end of the credits.
Yeah, I was wondering about that. I just thought maybe they thought, James hasn't been in enough, or maybe they were thinking by the credits everyone would be all up in the aisles dancing their little hearts out. How wrong they would have been.
Quite possibly. Well, yeah, they keep the cameos going and the singing going all the way through the credits.
Did you find... So, in your search, did you find out if that was an outtake? You possibly could have been.
I have no idea, and I think I'm not too sure if I'm prepared to dive any deeper into this movie.
Let's leave that unquestioned. And I think the thing is too, Trevor, you being such a big fan of the original, I don't want them to taint anything else for you.
Fair enough.
In regards to the film.
Well, we've talked about the final scene of the movie now, so I guess what we should do is move on and see if we did find any redeeming features in this movie. So I did pick this one, Christian. I decided to jump the gun and suggest it straight up. So I'll pass this to you first up to discuss anything you found redeemable.
Okay, well, it's definitely not an irredeemable film. Like, there's definitely so many redeemable features about it. And hey, you know, we're not looking at the, and I know we are looking at the film as a whole, but, you know, if we are saying redeemable features as such, you know, there's definitely things to be able to break down and look at the film and find enjoyable. I know we've touched on things like a lot of the same characters and cameos. And to me, at the heart of it, if we're looking at a way to sort of almost convince people to watch it, if I was going to say that, or, you know, if you're wanting an angle to go, okay, how should I go at this? You know, that is possibly the best way to see it. That's the most redeeming fact, that you've got so many great names, both in the rhythm and blues scene, people from the original film back, you know, very iconic people, I suppose, in comedy as well, too, that were very much in the same ballpark as, say, John Candy and Steve Martin, et cetera. So you've got a lot of those sort of cameos, and that to me essentially drives a film that possibly, you know, doesn't have a very good plot, doesn't really have much, it's very thin, it doesn't have much to it. But if you're going to a film that has musical numbers throughout, quite a lot of them, and still has a little bit of your action, your car scenes, and your cameos by all these actors and musical performers, I think that would be a way to say it is redeemable. But in terms of breaking it down just as a standalone film, well, I suppose even as a sequel too, you know, it definitely, as a standalone or a sequel, it's, you know, it can't sustain its 2-hour running time. And I just feel that it was trying too hard to replicate the original, like to almost to a T. How can we almost do this shot for shot without doing it shot for shot? They feel like they've done the next best thing or the next worst thing. I don't know. You know, little things about it make me wonder, wow, imagine if Aretha had done Respect in the original Blues Brothers film. Do you think that would have been a totally different thing? I actually think that would have been quite interesting. But thankfully they kept the song, so that becomes one of the highlights of the film, you know, being able to hear her perform a very iconic song. Even though features a lot of other iconic songs, it's you know, a lot of the songs were very unfamiliar to me, or I didn't really know them that well, so it's a great way to expose you to more of that type of music. But like we'd mentioned earlier with the Amazon review, it did feel very overproduced with the sound. You know, the others felt a bit more bluesy and a bit more rootsy, you know, and so this was very much much more polished. And I think, like what we were saying, it's very much aware of itself too. It's trying so hard to be a sequel, or tried so hard to be the original film. So I think that's what I come away with, is, you know, you tried way too hard, you know, what essentially could have been something with a lot of heart and could have kept the momentum going. Like the original film, it just ended up feeling so thin because it was just a showy piece of musical number attached to musical number attached to cameo. So I don't know, Trevor, I've gone off on a tangent, but it's not irredeemable. I don't say don't see it, but I can't really necessarily recommend it unless you're more as a curiosity. You know, I think if you're a fan of the Blues Brothers film, you need to see this. Like a Rocky Horror fan needs to see Shock Treatment, and you know, and a Jaws film needs to see Jaws too. I think it's yeah, it's definitely something that needs to be seen, but don't expect anything anywhere near as good as the original film. But, you know, if you like the structure, and I liked a lot of the things that happened in the first one, and you want to see someone try to replicate it, watch this movie. So that's me, Trevor. It is redeemable, but more as a curiosity, for sure.
Well, yeah, definitely from a redeemable point of view, even if most of the setups are very spurious, as in some cases just plenty laboured, the music is definitely a highlight. I really did enjoy the soundtrack to this movie, and as a tribute to the music and the musicians, you know, you can't fault it on that respect. It does try very hard to catch the feel of the first movie, and occasionally it does get close, even though it mostly tries too hard, and that's when it kind of falls flat again. So you find yourself starting to get into it, starting to get a bit of that feel, and then it just lets you down, unfortunately. It does have that very depressing opening that it works very hard to get over, and again, almost looks like it's going to get there. Tries. And just the cameos. I mean, if you are into particularly blues musicians and the like, you're going to see a lot of faces that you do like in this movie. As to whether it's redeemable, I cannot redeem it at all as a sequel to the Blues Brothers. It just falls too short. I try not to let that cloud my judgment too much, but really, because it tries so hard and it does keep you so much in mind of the original, that stops it from crossing that line. But if you can take a step back from that and just look at it as a celebration of music, I think that's where you're going to find your redeemable aspects of this movie. So I'm kind of like, yeah, two-layered. It's a multi-layered approach.
Well, I definitely think the last statement you made is for sure, Trevor. You know, if you want something light entertainment, you know, and you want to be able to hear this great music, because that is, essentially, it's the music that sells this. And I suppose, essentially, that's where the Blues Brothers stemmed from, back from when it was a Saturday Night Live skit. It was the, you know, it was the way that they performed this music, and it was the music they were performing. So, you know, and if this is a continuation, a celebration of it, yeah, that's probably a great way to look at it.
Yeah, yeah. And probably should move on. So, I mean, there are other opinions out there. And some people did particularly enjoy this movie. Now, I've gone through the more positive reviews, I suppose you could say, that I found on Blues Brothers 2000. And it is pretty consistent in, I suppose, the focus. So this probably is one that sums it up nicely. Blues music at its most entertaining. This movie is a sequel in name only. And if you look at it that way, the movie is very entertaining. It has a cast of blues performers that would be impossible to get together in one place again. B.B. King, Eric Clapton, Bo Diddley, Lou Rawls, Johnny Lang, Blues Traveller, Coco Taylor, Travis Titt, and many, many others. The music is incredible, and it's one of those movies you can just see everyone involved was having a great time. As expected, its plot certainly has an imagination, which just adds to the movie and just makes it laugh out loud fun to watch. 5 stars.
Oh, well, that's a lot more of a positive review. And even there, I still even probably liked some of the things that they said as well, you know, and kind of understood a lot. But yeah, definitely it seems to be the consistency is the music situation.
Mm-hmm. Be laugh out loud fun to watch, though? Well, everyone's entitled to their opinion, even if it's wrong.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I love that. But yeah, so as we can see, there's the 1-star reviews and there's also the 5-star reviews. But, you know, everyone's definitely heard how we feel tonight, Trevor, but I don't think I will be rushing back to see Blues Brothers 2000 anytime soon. And hey, I don't think Blues Brothers, I don't know, 20 is on the cards, but I'm sure if it is, it'll come out in 2018.
I'm sure there's some studio executive somewhere looking at if it can be rebooted, because frankly, yeah, that's what they're looking at right now.
I know, and I don't know if Dan Aykroyd's likely to say yes to it, but I had heard rumours that, not a rumour, a doco recently from John Belushi's wife, or, you know, she looks after his estate, and she said they're now auditioning people to be the Blues Brothers to go out and to perform the review, so Dan Aykroyd isn't, you know. So, but they may have been doing this for a while now. So, you know, there's definitely already replacements out there, so they could have already been thinking something like this with a whole new cast, but let's just hope they stay away.
Yeah, let's let this one be what it is, and we can just continue to celebrate the first one. And, well, you know what? If I could get my hands on it, I probably would pick up the soundtrack to the second one, even though I have no intention to watch the movie ever, ever again.
And, hey, may as well focus on one of the only good things about the movie, which is the music. So that's probably a wise thing, Trevor.
Absolutely. So so there we go. So Blues Brothers 2000, kind of redeemable, would you say?
Yeah, kind of redeemable, but more, yeah, in terms of the great cameos, the, you know, the same characters coming back, and the fantastic soundtrack. But aside from that, meh, there's just a little bit of muck in between it to try and hold it all together.
Indeed. So let's move on. Obviously, this is going to be an ongoing podcast, so we probably need to discuss what we're going to need to talk about next time and what the people out there should try to watch before Redeeming Features returns in 2 weeks' time. Now, I am taking 2 in a row, so Christian, I will let you have 2 in a row, so you need to get planning.
Ooh, the things I could make you watch, Trevor.
Sure, but what I thought I would do is I'd keep with the musical theme. I'd keep with celebrity appearances, I suppose you could say. And I thought we'd actually move on to a movie that I have been very wary of for a very long time. I almost can't say it. This is how much I am not looking forward to watching the movie I'm about to suggest.
Rated a grand total. My mind is reeling. Sorry. I don't know where this is going to go. Celebrity musical. Oh, what could it be?
Rated a grand total of 2.1 on IMDb. It was released in 2001 and starred musical diva Mariah Carey. I'm going to make us watch Glitter.
Oh, Trevor, no! I never thought I'd... Well, for a start, I never thought I'd hear you say that, mention that movie in my presence, but at the same time, I never thought I'd have to watch that movie. Oh, gosh.
I'm developing a eye twitch just thinking about it, but I tell you what, if we can redeem this movie, we are going to be legendary.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. I'm sure a lot of people will still want to throw tomatoes at us, but I can't discount it yet. I have not seen the film, so let's wait and see what happens when we see it. But I have a feeling that it's not going to be too redeemable, but that may be just going off its reputation. But we shall see what happens. We need to give it the Rufus Project treatment.
Indeed, we do. So if anybody out there in listener land, if you think we've been too harsh with Blues Brothers 2000, do you think we've been too generous? Do you have some redeeming features that you think should be mentioned? Or do you want to send us your comments about Glitter, if you have seen the movie, or even suggest a movie for us to watch, or a fresh challenge for us? You can be involved too. We've got a brand new email address, a bit easier and more consistent, therufusproject@gmail.com. So get your comments in, get your ideas in. If you head to the Podomatic page, therufusproject.podomatic.com, you can even leave comments below the podcast page that you're listening to right now. Yeah, so can't believe I just said the movie I just said, but it's too late to turn back now.
Oh, well, Trevor, yeah, you've said it now, Trevor. It just means I have to up the ante when it's my turn, so you've made us watch possibly the lowest of the low, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, well, I mean, admittedly, LOL was preparation for this.
Yeah, well, yeah, I think it was. So, and I think it worked well, as you said, coming off the Blues Brothers 2000 musical theme. So we can continue in that sort of vein and see if celebrities really can make a movie, a musical.
Yeah, whether it's a good movie, that's questionable.
Exactly. So, I'd best go and cover myself in a different kind of glitter, but I don't know if it's the kind.
We may be vomiting glitter by the end of it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, wish me luck, Trevor. I wish you luck too.
Yeah. And on that very, very tasteful note, I think this is probably a good spot to wrap things up. So everyone out there, thank you so much to listening to the first official Redeeming Features podcast. And hopefully we all survive glitter and we can all talk next time.
I hope you survive too.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much, Christian.
Thank you so much, Trevor. Always a pleasure doing our redeeming features. So look forward to glittering it up next time.
Oh, boy.
Good to be bad, so bad it's good. What's this movie? Do you think we should? Got bad, I love dodgy creatures, but we want to know what the redeeming features.
Boy? Oh boy.
Christian and Trevor on the case, watching movies from all over the place. IMDb says it's bad, but we want to know, is it fun to be had?
Boy? Oh boy.
Redeeming features.